show.
Yes, the Henry Morgan Show with Arnold Stang, Minerva Pias, Art Carney, Milton Cadence, the orchestra, the Billy Williams Quartet, and me, Ed Hurley. And here is the star of the Henry Morgan Show, standing on his favorite corner in front of the cigar store.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan.
Thank you very much. In the studio tonight, there is a delegation of approximately 200 private secretaries to congressmen. And I have a message for you charming people to bring back to your congressman. The message reads as follows to the congressman. You can fool some of the people all of the time and all of the people some of the time, and you should cut it out. Gee, judging by that applause, you'll all be investigated in the morning. I hope it wasn't a breach of etiquette, because I just happen to have about 30 jokes on etiquette on the same page here. For instance, nobody can tell me nothing about no table manners. I've made up some rules. I made up these rules after many years of eating all kinds of food, commercial and sustaining. Lately, it's been a little less. Well, the main rule in table manners, as you probably know, is never make yourself conspicuous. For instance, if you burn your tongue with hot soup, don't say, "Oh, I just burned myself in a soup. The soup is dirty." This is conspicuous. Just let your tongue hang out until it cools off. Now, if your hostess asks you what's wrong, just explain to her.
My tongue is burning soup, and it's very hot. My damn tongue.
If you have no soup spoon, don't embarrass your hostess by saying anything. Quietly dip a corner of your napkin in the soup and chew on it. If the napkin becomes too soggy, don't call attention to it. Just throw it on the floor. If you find a blonde hair in the soup and your hostess is a blonde, you can pass it off lightly by making a little joke. Just hold up the hair and say, "I see Mabel's in the soup again." Then, while everybody's laughing hysterically, throw the soup on the floor. You know, of course, it's impolite to ask for a second helping of anything. If you want more, hint. Pick up your plate and lick it. On the other hand, if your hostess offers you a second helping and you don't want any more, give the hostess a logical reason for refusing. You can say something like, "No, thanks. It smells from fish." Or you can simply say, "Ew." Of course, if she insists on putting more food on your plate, just smile pleasantly and then throw it on the floor. If she still insists on giving you more food, throw her on the floor. Main thing is considerate. Oh, excuse me. Here comes my friend Gerard. Hello, Gerard.
Hiya.
Gerard, I was just kidding around about table manners, but actually, did you know there are a lot of interesting facts on the subject?
Name one.
Well, do you know it's incorrect to serve ketchup in a ketchup bottle?
Who asked you?
Well, it's just it's a thing that happens to be true. You're not supposed to serve ketchup in a ketchup bottle.
What's that, a milk bottle?
No, in a serving dish. You see, it creates a bad effect to serve ketchup in a bottle.
Why? Well, it makes it taste like mustard or something?
No, it's just wrong, that's all. Well, let's see if you know the correct etiquette. Here's the thing. When served a finger bowl containing a slice of lemon, do you extract the lemon before using the bowl? Do you squeeze the lemon into the bowl? Or do you use the bowl as served?
You're kidding.
Exactly. It's one of the kinds of things you have to know when they serve finger bowls if you go to formal dinner parties.
If my grandmother had tubes, she'd be a radio.
I don't Well, try it another way. Now, here's an interesting problem. This should interest you. You're out, and you're dining with three ladies. See, in a restaurant, you're dining with three ladies, Miss A, Miss B, and Miss C.
Miss A, Miss B, and Miss C.
Yeah.
Where is Shane Dove?
Ashamed of anything. It's names I miss. Look, anyway, Miss B, who is seated between Miss A and Miss C, drops her napkin. Who's supposed to pick it up?
What old butterfingers pick it up herself?
Gerard, neither Miss A, Miss B, nor Miss C picks it up.
Then let Mr. D pick it up.
Where'd you get Mr. D?
Same place you got Miss A, B, and C.
Who is he?
He's the guy who likes to pick up napkins.
Gerard, why don't you answer the question? Who picks up the napkin?
I told you, Mr. D.
Forget about Mr. D. He doesn't exist.
Hank, I got news for you.
What?
Neither does the napkin.
But for the sake of argument, say it does exist, and you're actually dining with these three ladies. One of them drops her napkin. Now, who picks up the napkin?
That ain't what's bothering me.
Well, what is?
Who picks up the check?
I give up. I'll see you around, Gerard. Guess if I wanted to be real proper, I'd get over to the studio for the broadcast. Hey, taxi! Taxi! Good evening, anybody. We're happy at this time to present our Athlete of the Week, the man who, in our opinion, is the most noteworthy in his particular sport. Tonight, he's none other than the popular six-day bike rider, Speed Carney. Ladies and gentlemen, Speed Carney. Speed, I understand that you've just come off one of those grueling six-day bike races. What did you say?
That's right, Mr. Mo.
Speed, tell me, how did you first become interested in professional bicycle riding?
My father.
Well, I understand that. He also made his living from bike riding.
Yeah, he worked for the Western Union.
Yes. Now, suppose you tell us a little more about the part you play in a race.
That's how I got so bow-legged.
What?
You used to ride me on the handlebars.
Oh, yes, but to get on, you see...
You think I'm bow-legged?
No, I...
You think I'm bow-legged? You should see my father.
Yes. Now, Speed, we'd like to know more about the races that you've been in.
The Western Union had to make special pants for him.
Really?
Yeah, they used to hang his pants on a life preserver. Yeah.
Well, now, Speed, during a six-day bike race, what sort of food do you eat?
Well, I dasn't eat food. It lays on my chest.
I see.
I eat only liquids, yeah, like milk, tomato juice, water, malted. All them liquid things, drink like a solid food,
You drink all that, huh?
Yeah, I drink all that. When I go around the turn, you can hear me sloshing.
Speed, do you wear knee guards to protect you in case you have a fall?
Nah, it's all dead skin anyway.
Well, your knees are probably all calloused, aren't they?
You said it. I got calluses I ain't never seen.
Well, when you're in a six-day race, do you ever try any stunts?
Oh, no. I'm very industrious.
What?
Industrious. It means I like to win.
Oh.
Like when I'm pedaling and a guy starts to pass me up, I give him the knee.
That's industrious, yes.
I use big words sometimes, so if they don't understand, don't be ashamed to ask me.
I won't. No.
You know what tibia curvature means?
Tibia curvature what?
Means my father's bow-legged.
Thanks. Well, Speed, to conclude this little interview, are there any personal observations you care to make?
Yeah, Mr. Morgan, just one.
What is it?
You ride a bicycle?
No, I don't.
How come you're so bow-legged?
I have a tibia curvature clause in my contract. And thank you very much, Steve Carney. Mm-hmm.
Billy Williams Quartet takes a look around and comes out with a song called Dry Bones.
Well, the toe connected to the foot, and the foot connected to the heel, and the heel connected to the ankle, and the ankle connected to the leg.
And the leg bone connected to the knee bone, and a knee bone connected to the thigh bone, and a thigh bone connected to the hip bone, and a hip bone connected to the back bone, and a back bone connected to the shoulder bone, and a shoulder bone connected to the neck bone.
Thank you, Billy Williams and the other three. Ladies and gentlemen, lots of hip songs have fine lyrics, like Dry Bones, but a lot of them are really beautiful poems. But people don't appreciate them because the words are hidden by the music. Now take that song, If I Knew You Were Coming, I'd Have Baked a Cake. Now this is really a tender poem about love, telling how a boy and girl really feel about each other. So to bring out the beauty of the words, we'll do the song right now, without music. Listen.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Baked a cake?
Baked a cake.
If you knew I were coming, you'd have...
baked a cake.
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
Now, I don't know where you came from.
But you don't know where I've been.
But it really doesn't matter.
I'll grab a chair and fill my platter.
Yeah. Dig right in.
If you knew I were coming, you'd have baked a cake?
Hired a band.
Goodness sake.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have...
baked a cake?
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
Yeah, music. Music. Reminds me, there'll be a pretty educational ballet lesson on the program tonight. Pretty educational ballet lesson. Would you introduce it, Ed?
Gladly, Henry.
With ballet music arranged by Bernie Green and played under the sensitive baton of Maestro Milton Caden, we present... that world-famous genius of pirouettes and entrechats, ballet master Henri de la Morgan, giving a young lady her first ballet lesson.
The music represents a forest in the woods. Now, you must understand this. Your father is an oak tree. And you, the dancer, are in love with another acorn. And this makes you very happy. You see, on your toes. On your toes. Now, the tour jeté. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Very good. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, jump. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, jump. Unfortunate. You must have stepped on some fine needles or something. You see, mademoiselle, it is necessary to put one foot in front of other foot, but it's very unfortunate if you put both foot in front of other foot. Now we do the entrechat. You, this way you like, you jump up and make one toes rapidly hit with other toes, quick, four times, then come down. Now remember, the little acorn is looking at you. Ah, very good, yes. Magnifique. Oh, very good, yes. Be careful. Look out. Unfortunate. Now, you must understand, this is love story. The acorn, because of your dancing, does not look at you no more. You must attract to him yourself. Try to make the acorn to love you yourself. Try to make the acorn to love you. Unfortunate. By the way, who taught you to make bumps? And please, mademoiselle, you must understand, you must keep from the window away, please. Now we do the pirouette. You are on your toes, and you spin around rapidly from the window away, if you please. Sit up there, from the window. Not near the window, please. Away from the window. Unfortunate. Next pupil, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, radio listeners sometimes complain that programs on the air are not on a high enough level. But we can fix that. Let's take the most popular type of radio program, which is a mystery or private eye show. Suppose we were to present a private eye story, but by William Shakespeare.
Hmm? Did he write one?
Yes, Eddie did. Hamlet. Hamlet is really a private eye story. I can prove that. We'll do that. Ladies and gentlemen, Hamlet, of whom done it?
The Adventures of Ham Spade, Private Orb.
I was sitting around my private office, which is located in a private part of Elsinore, having a private talk with my private secretary. At the same time, I was giving her the private eye. Suddenly, I grabbed her up in my arms and crushed her to me.
business is slow anyway. As she looked up into my two private eyes, I said, thou art for me, honey.
Me for thee and thee for me, him.
Ah, you are the one. The only fair Ophelia.
You think I'm beautiful, huh?
No, only fair Ophelia. Ophelia, where didst you ever get a name like Ophelia?
I'm Irish.
Well, you're sweet enough to eat whether you're an Irish cookie or a Danish pastry.
Oh, Ham, you killed me.
She shouldn't have said that. I don't take orders from dames. And it reminded me I still hadn't solved the killing of my father, the King of Denmark. Me, the biggest private eye in the country, and I couldn't even solve his murder. Something was rotten in the state of Denmark. It was me. Suddenly the phone rang. She answered it.
Hello? It's for you.
Well, take the message. She took it and said,
that was thy friend, Horatio. He said if he'd just seen it, the ghost of your father.
My father? The ghost? Horatio? The pieces were beginning to fit together. If I had two more pieces, I'd have five pieces. Suddenly, I grabbed my secretary up in my arms and crushed her to me. There was a tiny cry of pain from her.
Ow! Watch thyself, will you?
I clipped her and threw her out of the room. As soon as she was gone, I said to myself, oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. And then I thought, no, I ain't, just nerves. But suddenly I straightened up. The door to my office was slowly opening.
Who is entering Ham Spade's office? Is it the ghost? Is it the man who came to oil up the door? We'll find out in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor, the makers of Othello, the king-size cigarette. Yes, Othello cigarettes are king-size. Merely stand one up against the King of Denmark and see if they're not the same size. Listen to this testimonial from an Othello smoker.
Whene'er I getteth to feeling like a melancholy Dane, I do thus. I relaxeth up and lighteth up an Othello. There's ne'er a roughest puppet. Yes, there what I talk.
And now, back to Ham Spade, Private Orb. As we left Ham, the door to his office was slowly opening. A strange figure stood in the doorway. But tough, two-fisted Ham Spade stood up and called out, unafraid,
police!
Then, settling back, he spoke.
Who art thou?
I am my father's ghost.
But, father, you look terrible.
Listen, when you're dead 3 months, you should look so good.
Alas, poor ghost.
Oh, pity me not, but lend thy serious hearing to what I shall unfold. I shall tell thee whom dummy am.
Haste me to know it.
Listen, Em.
Speak, I am bound to hear it.
Listen, Em.
Speak, what may this mean?
Listen, Em.
Speak then, O ghost. Speak then, O ghost, and tell why thou comest so.
Big mouth, listen already.
Speak then.
Listen closely. You listening?
I'm listening.
Well, listen. It's my own brother, thy uncle, who murdered me.
Nay.
I tell him yea. He tells me nay.
But, father.
Yeah.
Tell why thy canonized bones, hearsed in death, have burst their cerements, and why the sepulchre wherein we saw thee quietly inurned hath opened its ponderous and marble jaws and cast thee up again.
This is the way to talk to your father?
Father.
Hmm?
What mayest I do to avenge thee?
Go to thine uncle, who hath made himself king, and take up my wife and leave him have it.
Very well. I shall remember thee, And my mother, too, that fickle woman. Oh, frailty, thy name is woman. Oh, mother, thou most pernicious woman.
This is the way to talk about your mother?
I'll remember thee.
Yeah, so listen to it, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, and one more thing before I leave.
Yes? Yeah?
Which way did your secretary go?
That caused me to think he ain't so dead. I wondered how to get rid of my uncle. Should I blow up the castle with him in it? Make a shambles of the place? Reduce it to a pile of debris? Yes. Debris or not debris? That was the question. I decided to go see my mother and confront her with the news. I found my mother in the kitchen. Mother, I've got some news for thee that'll knock thy farthingale right off.
What is it?
Thy present husband bumped off my pot. What do you say to that?
Eat your supper.
I was about the clipper when the door opened and my father, the ghost, appeared. He spoke.
Ham?
Yes, Father?
This visitation is but to whet thy almost blunted purpose, and I ain't kidding.
Father, thou art just in time to eat supper.
No, I can't. Everything I eat shows on me.
As we stood talking, the door to the broom closet opened and a man suddenly appeared. It was Joe Polonius, my uncle's personal bodyguard, and the father of my secretary. He was coming straight for me. My mother screamed.
Look out, he's got a sword!
It's all right, I got a gun. I had killed my girl's father. He lay there, dead at my feet. And as I looked down at him, I thought to myself, As we stood there, the door flew open and my secretary, Ophelia, appeared. How she got there, I don't know. But that's the way it is in Denmark. You killed somebody and right away the whole town knows.
He killed my father.
Yeah, Charlie must be mad.
He's mad. I'm very much annoyed.
Just then the door flew open and my Uncle Claudius, the king, appeared.
Hello, dear. What's for supper? Say, what's all this?
Oh, Hamlet just killed Polonius. Ophelia's gone crazy and thy brother's ghost is somewhere in this room.
Oh. Anyone for Canasta?
I felt that now was the time for action. I turned to my uncle and said, reach for the heavens, thou bloody, bawdy, remorseless, treacherous, kindless villain.
This is the way you talk to an uncle?
There was a furious exchange of gunshots. I was hit. Just before I blacked out, I saw my father, the ghost, grab Ophelia up in his arms and crush her to him. Dead, he said. It's not the end. A few days later, I was back in my private office. My head was tilting to one side because of the bullet in my brain. The phone rang and my secretary, Ophelia, went to answer it.
Hello? It's for you.
Who is it?
Macbeth.
Tell him next week.
Morgan Show with Arnold Stang, Minerva Fires, Art Carney, Elsie May Gordon, the Billy Williams Quartet, the Milton Kidman Orchestra. Morgan himself will be back in this corner in front of the Cigar Store next week, same time. The Henry Morgan Show is produced by Kenneth McGregor, Ed Hurley. He's saying good night, everyone.
Listen for a trio of great comedy shows on the CBC's Trans-Canada Network each Tuesday. Henry Morgan, Bob Hope, who follows in half an hour, and Fibber McGee and Molly, who follow hot on the heels of Hope. The Henry Morgan Show comes to Canadian listeners as a delayed broadcast through NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. This is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.